Welcome to the Upstaging Gentlemen podcast. This is Michael with Play With Your Food Productions.
And Nathan with Legendary Productions.
How's it going, Nathan?
Good, pretty good, actually. I'm really tired, but I'm faking it for the mic.
I am really tired as well.
Yeah, we gotta stop staying up so late.
So we literally just walked in, John, our sound guy, is all set up. So we just walked in. We haven't even really properly greeted each other.
No,
so,
we haven't. Hey, Nathan. Hey, buddy, I didn't give you a hug or anything, man.
No.
Did I hug you, John? Dang it. Well.
There were no hugs for you.
We'll hug afterwards. We'll double it up.
We'll do that in between recordings.
Yeah, sounds good.
It'll be romantic.
Dude, I'm excited. That was not a sound effect. That was me. That was not a sound bite.
So, I think when we last sat down to do the recordings, we record a couple of them on a day, and you were about to open up with Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes.
And I was about to open up with my dinner show, Bell, Book, and Candle. And so I guess now we come back and talk about those. Do I have some stories?
I want to hear your stories. You got me excited when you called me the other day and were like, dude, let's bust out some recordings. I was like, well, what do you got to talk about? And you're like, dude, I got some stuff to tell. So let's tell it. I want to hear it firsthand on the podcast.
It was rough. Bell, Book, and Candle, we just went through some stuff that was very rough.
The show was rough or the process?
Well, there was both. The show, it's not that the show was rough. Now, the show did take a little bit more mental energy than other shows because it's a three act, and we actually did it just uncut. And so, and it's a classic three act, which makes it probably about, 45 minutes, maybe to an hour longer than another typical show might be.
Which is hard in itself.
Yeah. So, I mean, I remember like when we finally broke for intermission, and this was well practiced. We were on pace. We weren't delivering lines slowly, but it was, probably well over an hour into before we got to intermission, whereas typically looking at a 45 to 50 minute first act.
Let me ask you a question on that.
Yeah.
Was it hard? I mean, knowing your constituency, they're a little older. Was it? Did you get a lot of bathroom breaks and stuff? I know it's weird, but we have to think about that. Did a lot of people get up and have to go?
No, and a lot of them were really excited for this title.
Oh, good.
And I didn't realize it until we were at the show, until the audience was coming in. But they were telling the stories, one guy was like, this was the first movie I ever saw in the movie theater.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And, just there was a lot of stories. Like, people really had some very fond memories of this title. And, but it was a three act, which I don't do a lot of those. I do two acts. So that third act did bring about the challenge.
Did you take another intermission?
No, we just.
Push through.
Yeah, we pushed through. We took intermission. There is no marked spot for an intermission in the script.
Okay.
I think you're just supposed to do it.
Right, because sometimes it's act three acts, but there's not really a break for an intermission.
Yeah, so it doesn't say intermission, but where the clear break in the acts are. So we just found a spot that we're like, okay, this is... Because we didn't want to end up with the thing where we have this really, really long first act and then like a 20-minute after intermission,
right, can come awkward. Back.
And, yeah, so we found a spot to break it. But that third act was a lot of line memorization. And, of course, the producer in me is thinking, man, I got to pay the wait staff by the hour.
Yeah.
Adding a show with a third act, what is that costing every single night to be paying, five members of a wait staff? And,
yeah.
we're paying them by the hour. So, we're trying to... Get through it. But so there's that going on. But then as we just hit challenge after challenge, I'll say. The first one came down right when we started rehearsing. So we opened in January, right? Mm-hmm. And we've got breaks off for Thanksgiving and for Christmas time and for New Year's. And so it's already a little scattered as it is. And we come in and we have our read through. Cool. It's going to be a great cast. And then bam, the first person comes down with the flu. And I don't know what's going on here, but this is like the flu of the flu. This isn't the 24 hour, the 48 hour flu. This is the thing that knocks them out for a week.
Jeez.
And when they came back after a week, they were still run down. They came back, we had one actor come back and this is almost like a joke. The next actor gets out. And they're gone for a week.
Wait, they got sick as soon as that one comes back?
The other one came back, but they weren't there at the same time. like one person would be like, all right, I'm coming back Monday night. And then the other actor would call in Monday morning. I'm really, really sick. I'm throwing up. I can't, like, okay. And then that person would come back and another one. And we never had a full cast rehearsal until December.
Oh my God.
Like it's unbelievable. Like, because, and everybody was out the same. And these are people that I know. They're hardworking. They wouldn't just call in sick. They're not faking.
Right.
They were legit. Like, I know these people. But, like, I don't know. Somehow I avoided it. I didn't get sick. But then challenge number two comes on opening night. We had one of the characters, we had a guy in the cast, and the guy he's a phenomenal makeup artist and hairstylist and stuff. And he looked over at the character or the lady, Monica, and he was like, "Can I make you into a blonde for this show?" And, you know, she's got darker skin, and she was like, "Blonde hair on me? Like, how is that going to work? I've never, ever, ever been a blonde before." He's like, "I can do this. I can picture it in your mind. You would look stunning as a blonde." And he's like, "Watch, I'll get a wig." And so he gets this wig, and he razors the thing, he styles the thing, he puts so much time into it, and then took a long time to do her makeup, and he puts this wig on her, and like, bam, like he did it, he pulled it off. She's like, she's a blonde, and I'll show you pictures later if you have.
Yeah, I want to see it.
So we started advertising everywhere, and you know, she's advertising these pictures all over, like, "Hey, check me out, I'm a blonde," and people, like, you know, leaving her comments like, "Holy cow, we've never," you know, I think her Facebook profile picture as of right now is still her as a blonde, I believe. So we're so proud of this wig, and we've got it in our flyers, we everywhere. Well, opening night comes, and I'm with the audience, right? And this lady walks into the theater, and there's not a really kind way to put this. She's so high. She is like on meth or something. She is just out of her mind.
Was she a customer or just a random person?
No, a random person that walked in.
Oh, okay.
And luckily, you know, we got her intercepted right at the door.
Right.
As she came in. And she is talking faster than Robin Williams on his fastest day. And she's talking about nonsense. And she walks in and she's like, "Just need to warn you guys, I just got back from Russia and World War III is coming. It's going to happen probably anytime now. He's at the kitchen. Can I be in the kitchen? Do you guys celebrate Jesus? Do you, who loves Christmas time? Who loves Christmas time here? Do you know in Russia you could get," and she's just going, and like, what is going on? And she's, you know, clearly off the street and she's got a bag. And, right. And so I'm like, I don't know what to do here. So I send a message to, this was actually pretty mean of me. I sent a message, like, I'm trying to stall her, and I'm like, I sent a message to one of our actors, Shen, who's, you know, backstage. I'm like, "Tell Shen that there's somebody out here that wants to talk to him." And
oh my gosh.
So I get the lady outside, and she's just going, 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 and Shen pops his head out and was like, "Yeah, Shen, right over here. Someone wants to talk to you." He walks out, and I walk in. I'm like, and he's stuck out there with her, and I pop my head out, and he's just listening to her and shooting me a look. Well, all to find out, she finally packs her things, and he convinced her to go. I don't know what he said, but she left. And then the makeup artist, hairstylist comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, nobody's playing a trick on me, are they?" And we're like, "No, why?" And he goes, "Well, the wig is gone." And he's like, I was like, "I just saw the wig. It was here when I got here. It was right over here in like the changing room. And I know I saw it." And he's like, "It's gone now. You sure nobody's playing a trick? They're not hiding it from me?" And then, so we're looking everywhere. Where could this thing have gone? And then a member of the wait staff comes out and was like, "Oh yeah, that lady that you were talking to, we saw her back in there." And I'm like, "Did she take the wig?" She was like,
"She stole the wig?
She stole the wig." And she probably put it in her backpack and just walked out, and you know, I didn't know she had been in there, or like, we would have been like, "Can we just check your backpack real quick and get our wig back? We'll buy it back from you if need be." But that was like so demoralizing. That was like having your team mascot stolen right before the show, because I felt so bad for him because of the amount of time he had worked on that wig, and then bad for Monica too, because it's like, that was like, she'd practiced with that wig. It was like, you know, part of the character and everything. And you know, and she was all in her makeup and everything. The last thing they had to do was just add the wig to her head, and then we go on. So this was like 10 minutes before the show. We realized the wig is snagged by this lady.
Obviously, you didn't go get it.
No, we tried, man. After that, we ran like every direction we could. We're like searching for her, but she's gone at this point. She's probably telling somebody else about World War III and Russia and everything. I don't know.
That's sad.
Yeah, so, but we do the show, and the audience, you know, luckily the audience doesn't even say anything. She just went on with her regular hair. Chris is the makeup hairstylist guy. He just did a really quick, fix on her hair, and she went out, and the show went great. And the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the first weekend all went great, but Chris was feeling a little bit off, on Sunday. And so was another one of our actresses, and it's a 5-person cast, and so Chris goes home, and that night he texts me and says, "I just tested positive for COVID," and this is, you know, we're in the middle of a dinner theater run. This is like the food is purchased. I cannot cancel the show, and then the double whammy. Our other actress, Stephanie, she's like, "I just tested positive as well." And so the rest of the cast has to test. And fortunately, the rest of us come up, you know, negative. And so, okay, we're cool. And the pressure's off a little bit because we finished the weekend. And then, I'm like, okay, so Chris, you got to test like every day. Like, how long have you had it? Like, maybe it'll be like tomorrow. Like, maybe you had it and you didn't know about it. And maybe it'll be gone. Maybe tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, you'll test again, and it'll be negative, and we'll be good to go. Well, Monday, positive. Tuesday, positive. Wednesday, positive. Thursday, positive. I'm starting to panic now. And I'm like, what are we going to do? We're going to have to call in a sub. Well, it ended up being Chris was fine by Friday. He was like, okay. Like, this was like, wow, okay. He came in. And, you know, had the negative testing and was good. And he's still, you know, masked up and isolated from everybody. But so he's good, but not Stephanie. Stephanie is still coming down with, like, she's like, I just tested. I'm not ready to go yet. So at this point, I had called in just one person that I was crazy enough that I knew would do it, would memorize all these lines and jump on stage. The only problem is it was a fill-in for Stephanie, and the only one I could think who would do this was a guy named Jonah.
A guy.
And I'm like, here's the thing. I need you to put on a wig and a dress, memorize lines, and get on stage. And I think... Jonah is crazy enough to do this and brilliant enough to do this, I should say. And he's probably one of the favorite play with your food performers as it is. He's a natural comedian. So this guy walks on stage and you just root for him automatically. I would say he's got, you know, a little bit of that John charisma,
so,
right there.
So creative genius.
So this guy, just definitely like just something in him. Just makes you want to root for him. But the fact, his response to me, I sent him this text message, and I'm like, Stephanie is not going to make it. He literally responds, well, hope she gets well soon, but God knows I will do what must be done. That's his message back to me. And he shows up, and we get the girls in the cast are bringing in costume pieces for him, and he's... I'll show you a picture of what he looked like later. Like the audience may not have been able to tell. And he walked on stage. Like, they made him up really, really well. And he went with it. Like, dude went with it. And at the end, like, when he pulled off his, you know, I announced him, I was like, so we had a fill in tonight, and he pulls off his wig and the audience recognizes who he is from our previous shows. He just got a huge applause. So, like, that part went off well, but it was an extremely stressful week there, right there. However, the second weekend, it all went smoothly. It all went well. There was nothing that the audience saw that was wrong with the show, other than the first night we didn't have a wig. We went out and got another wig for the second night, and Chris, our hairstylist, got it all put together. But like I said, the audience never saw anything, but if the camera was going on behind the scenes on this one.
Right.
So
sounds like a nightmare, but again, as you do in live theater, you have to persevere and push through.
Yeah. And just again, just like the reminder for any listeners, like the reason that we wanted to do the podcast was so that we could talk about all the behind the scenes stuff. So we'll just be like, yes. And the whole time I'm thinking like, well, this will at least give me something to talk about on the podcast.
Did the attendance do well being the title it was?
Yeah, it did. It was really, really was well attended. Despite the fact that January is, I don't know, that's kind of our lower. Usually, traditionally, January doesn't quite get the big numbers that October and March does. But it still was really high. In fact, they were so high that they might outdo our March numbers. I'm not sure. It'll be a couple weeks yet before the March show opens. But yeah, I was really happy with the January numbers. The royalties on that were pretty expensive. Mm. I mean, not like doing a musical, but just
right.
You know, with the price of that. So I had to keep that in mind. It was a good title. It was a classic title. Great dialogue. Great show. But had its challenges there.
And aren't you starting another production, the original work, Ruby Red?
Rigby
Red, sorry.
Yeah.
What's Ruby Red? Is that a drink?
Probably.
Sorry, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have Rigby Red.
Rigby Red. Yeah, it opens in 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks now.
So you're obviously in rehearsal process, and how's that going?
It's going.
Yeah.
All right, well, since it's the podcast.
I know it's original work, so.
And what does that mean for me? As far as my timeline, let's see how well you know me here. When did the script get done?
Is it done? Is it done right now or today?
It was done a week ago.
Oh, was it?
I finished it up last Sunday.
I was like, either your script's not quite done or you're not memorized yet, even though you wrote it. It's one of those two.
I'm not memorized yet, yeah. But the script is done.
Okay.
I've got the script in my car and I'm going to be working on it. But the songs were actually the hard part for this one.
But didn't you already have all the songs pretty much done?
I kept the thing is, I wanted to keep writing songs because I felt like the songs would inspire the script, and I didn't want to write too much of the script until I had like the songs. And so,
well,
and
I'm sure as you're writing the script, you're like, wait, I need a song about this though. I'm sure that probably made it hard, or no?
I don't know. This was really, really a backwards process. The script. I don't know. Yeah, it was the songs were the thing, and it was the songs that dictated the script.
Interesting.
Kind of like, so I really didn't start the script until probably after, you know, after the first album was released and the second album was almost in the works. But yeah, we have two original albums now, and the second one, I think by the time that this podcast is out, the second album will already be released. Or if not, it will just be days away from being released. But yeah, we had two full albums of a character who's not even real.
I know, that's crazy. Is he getting a lot of following still?
Yeah, I mean, it's going. Yeah, the songs are getting hits and stuff like that. But it's just funny because this character that doesn't even exist actually has two real albums. So.
That's really cool. Actually,
go and listen to, but it'll be a good show coming up. But we're all cramming and stuff like that, and this is gonna push our limits for tech, more than what we've ever tried before at my dinner theater. I mean, it's just like I bought a bunch of sound equipment. I had to wait until the Black Friday special happened back in November, and just bought all kinds of tech stuff, microphones and cables and mic stands and just all sorts of things. Cause I could get them for, you know, at a huge discount
right
then. And got some theater lights for like the concerts and stuff like that. And we're just going to see what we do. Like that dinner theater, it's got just, all we do is just very basic stuff. So this is absolutely going to, you know, push what we're capable of doing in that building. But you just got done with Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes.
Yeah, so tell us all about that.
Awesome, great experience. As I talked about in the podcast prior, when we were talking about saving money and renting the plant for the show, it was going to cost around $5,000. And Tish, our prop lady, set dresser, she's just awesome. She comes up to Steve and I and says, hey, let's build it. Then we could use it as a rental and we could rent it out. Which I like that idea because $5,000 for 2 weeks is pretty expensive. So I was thinking, well, we could rent it out for $2,000 just to help other local theaters. Just after we pay off what it costs to build, then we just, that's money that we could pay Tish for building and her team to help build that. But it was very successful. We had a great turnout at the theater. I'd like to say it's a cult following, but a lot of people just haven't heard of the title and they came and saw it and just loved it. We went to Kuiper Performing Arts Center, had great audiences there, great responses, and it really was a great show. It was really, overall, it was just one of our most rounded shows that we've had, as far as the caliber, the cast, the talent. The choreography was amazing. The just tech was off the charts. Obviously, the costumes and puppets were great. The music sounded good. It just was a great group. And there's this rumor going around that another theater started, I'm not going to name names, but they started saying that we have a bunch of Sweetener tracks and stuff that it's not our cast singing. And that's like one of the best compliments ever. You're like, yes, that's great gossip because it's not true. So that means it sounds so good that they feel like it's like the album or the cast album from Broadway because they're like, oh, they put Sweeteners in, which is adding vocals or stuff to a show. But I love that that's the gossip going around because that means when people come see it, they're like, where's the other 5,000 people singing right there in your face? So it's kind of a cool lie, but it's kind of nice. So I love that. But the cast was off the charts and we had auditions for Little Mermaid. We started a rehearsal process for that. That's going so good. The cast for that's going to be really good. All the kids and adults that are in that show are so talented. We've had a few music rehearsals. We're starting choreography this coming week. It's going to be such a good show, and our set design for it is going to be amazing. We're going to have I'm not going to give away too much, but we're going to have a pool in there so Ariel could swim up to the shore. It's just going to be off the charts, and we have tech that's waterproof. It's just going to be a lot of cool things. I'm not going to give away too much, but it's going to be a great show.
Was that was similar to what you did in Mamma Mia?
Yeah, Mamma Mia, we built a shoreline that was only about 6 inches deep or 8 inches deep. This is actually going to be a 36-inch deep pool we're building so Ariel could swim up and be in the water looking at the prints on the shore and stuff. So just have some iconic moments. And we're going to have scents in there, so when you come in, it smells like the ocean. Similar to Mamma Mia as well. But it's going to be really good, and I'm excited about it. And we have a lot of fun, creative stuff we're adding to that show. So it's exciting. It's fun going from one show that challenged me and us creatively and go, all right, now what do we do? How do we raise the bar? And that's the hardest thing I feel for me creatively. When you do something in your mind that's your best and it's amazing, obviously I'm biased, but when it's amazing, you go, crap, what do I do next? How do I raise the bar? How do I keep that on the same level of awesomeness or amazingness? So that's hard sometimes to be creative that way. And the solution that I've been using is, well, surround yourself with creative people that are better than you in areas. And that encourage that kind of mentality, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I was thinking back to something you said about Little Shop of Horrors having a cult following.
Uh-huh.
And it made me think of something like, how many people do you think, I mean, I don't even expect an answer on this one. It's more of a rhetorical question. But how many people do you think would have heard of that show if the movie version with Steve Martin and Rick Moranis hadn't been there?
I don't think they would have at all.
Like, because I was thinking about it, I was like,
it's because of them. It's an iconic cult following.
Because I was thinking about that. That was the first time that I'd ever heard of it, and then I watched it, and then all of a sudden it caught my eye. When you see a theater doing it, like, oh, I've seen that, but you see it because you remember Steve Martin as the dentist and everything. So, yeah, like where would that show be without that movie?
I don't think. And if you think about the cast in there, there was Bill Murray wasn't he in there as a special, like one of the guys trying to buy his company or buy the plant. Bill Murray. There's, what's his name? Jim Belushi, I think, was in it.
What's your...
Like, they were in there as, like, cameos at certain points. And was Dan Aykroyd in it? I think those three maybe were in it. What, I'm mixing up names, but there were just some iconic actors in there that were in the prime of their, like, fame, or they were up and coming. And you look and go, holy crap, what a stellar cast. I mean, and I love that Rick, I can't say his last name.
Moranis.
Yeah, he gave up acting to go be a dad and be with his family and do that. I respect that. And now, hopefully, I think he's coming back, which is really cool. But, yeah, so I think that's what made it a cult following, that those characters created that crazy world. And it was fun to replicate that. And our set looked really legit. It was this one building that opened up and to do interior. We had fire escapes. It just was a really legit set. And the cast just did so good. Mark did good with the tech. And I don't know, we did a really good job with that. I was really proud of that one. It's one that I was telling you guys or John before we started recording. Sometimes when we do like 23 or 19 productions or something like that, and I sat through every one of them and was entertained. It's not like, you know, jokes when you're blocking a show and you're running a tech week, you go, all right, these jokes aren't funny anymore. I need to hear an audience laugh at them or not laugh at them so I know what to fix. Mm-hmm. But this show, I was continually surprised or entertained by the characters and the actors and the overall show. It was fun. The music's really fun, and it's kind of a little mix of a variety of all kind of genre. There's like Motown, there's like a little bit of rock, country. It's just a mix of everything, ballads. It was really good. So it was a good process, and we had a good time, but it was a lot of work.
So where do you keep that plant when
it's actually being rented right now, but we're gonna fly it in our theater. We're gonna float it in the air, so it'll live above everything because it's so big. I mean, it was like 8x11. I mean, it was a big plant.
Yeah,
the big one.
That's what I was thinking.
But I mean, 8 people, so it had to be pretty big. But and then also, Tish, who helped create that, she actually is gonna store it in her house too, in her garage. She has like a 3-car garage. She has a lot of her props there because she organizes them all and keeps them updated and stuff. So.
A 3-car garage, and the only thing that's going to fit in it is the plant.
Pretty much. And the plant takes up mostly all of it, which is kind of funny, but that's what we do. Yeah.
So how was it taking that one on tour to YPAC?
It was hard because, and I'll say this, Mark and I are pretty creative with building sets here and being able to break them down to bring them over to YPAC, but there's something that I don't want to ever get comfortable doing is when we do shows at the theater, I don't want to lessen our sets here because we have to be able to transport them. So This show, we built it like we were in our space and not traveling. Well, it took us about 6 to 9 hours just to take it apart, to get it loaded into a couple of trucks and bring it over there. So that's something that we're doing better at, but we design it in this space knowing it has to move to YPAC. And the thing at YPAC is you cannot screw into their stage there at all. So Here... something moves a little bit, put it right in the ground, it's not moving. Well, over there, we got to be creative and counterbalance everything, put weights, sandbags on stuff. So it's a little hard, and sometimes we have to adapt over there. Instead of having maybe 3 stories, we do 2, and then we build off to the side of the 3rd floor to allow them to say they're upstairs. So we just have to be creative. At Christmas Carol, we had to do that. Our bridge was too, the way we did it here, it went over our whole audience. But at YPAC, I had to just kind of shrink it down to like a 4x8 platform and just pretend that we were up on a bridge. So,
does YPAC have a theater group of their own, or do they rely solely on outside groups to come
solely
in?
On us, actually. We're their only partner right now that does theater stuff there. So our partnership with them is just legendary as of right now. I think their goal is to eventually have more. But part of our thing is with that, well, we want to be careful that people don't go see other people's shows and assume that's our quality or our style. So we're very cautious of that, but they do a lot of other things besides musical theater or drama. But as of right now, it seems like, I mean, I know we're the only partners right now that do musical theater or drama. Mm-hmm. So, which is a good relationship, and we bring people to them. So,
but, oh, yeah. John's giving us the 1 minute. All right. So, yeah. So I guess that was for everyone listening, that was our last about... Well, month and a half or so.
It sounds like I had an awesome time and you had a very rough time in the beginning.
You know what, man? It's like, you know, certain shows have their challenges, and this was it. And when I, you know, when I'm reading the script, I'm like, oh, this is straightforward. This is going to be fine. But we're, you know, I just was not expecting the cast to come down sick on two different occasions and then to, you know, get our wig nabbed. And it's like we were hitting issues that, gosh, we just hadn't dealt with before. And then with the fact that it was a third act, not having a rehearsal until December, an all-cast rehearsal with an extra long show, that, I don't know, that was an extra challenge right there. But it came together, you know, thanks to the dedication of that cast. And
well, Mike, and also your leadership, though. You're a leader, and when stuff gets hard, you don't tuck your tail and run away. Maybe you tuck your tail, but they don't see that. But here's the deal. It's leadership. And I think that's something that's important to talk about on the podcast is being a leader when times are hard. When crap's hitting the fan, it would be easy to be like, bye, or I don't know, I give up. But you push through, you persevere, and I think that's important for people that want to jump into theater or want to even any adventure or any dream they're chasing. When crap gets hard, it doesn't mean you just stop or give up. You keep pushing forward, and I respect that you did that. And because of that, you had a good turnout. The audience never knew. They saw a good show, and you had a good turnout, which is great.
The best leadership decision, if we want to look at it that way, that I could have made in that show was getting that cast.
Well, good.
For that show. I mean, that was like the most dedicated group of people. I mean, they were determined, and they did pull it off, and it was a success. Just a hard going one. But so that's it. So, all right. So, shall we bring this episode to a close?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of the Upstaging Gentlemen podcast. We will catch you on the next episode.
Later.